Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we're blessed again today with live performance from our Buck studio. We'll also be hearing some very interesting music from CD from the teacher of my guest today. And my guest is one of our Final Forte Bolts Young Artist Competition finalists, and his name is Michael Dorn. He comes all the way from Eagle River, Wisconsin, up in Vilas County. Welcome.
Thank you.
Did I get all that right? Vilas County?
Yeah,
Eagle River?
Quite a drive.
I was going to say, I guess if nothing else, all that driving around gets you accustomed to the life of a professional pianist constantly on the go.
You know, I've never thought of it that way, but you're right. My family and I have gotten quite adjusted to the four-hour round trip to Stevens Point and back.
And so you go to Stevens Point, UW Stevens Point, because your teacher is there.
Yes. My teacher, Dr. Rafi Basalian, is a professor at UW Stevens Point. I'm actually taking private leave from him right now, but in the fall I will be attending the university there, and I will be taking from him officially.
So do you see any disadvantages other than all that travel, which can be an advantage at your age, as we've said, in being way up in Vilas County, away from, you know, large venues that produce classical music?
Yeah, it can be a slight disadvantage. We like to joke, you know, up where we are at, as far as support for young artists, as far as competitions and teachers that go, it's definitely not like the Madison area. So like, well, we shouldn't really be doing this up where we're at. Where I come from at Eagle River, it's mainly a hunting, fishing, snowmobiling, skiing type of place. And I actually don't do any of those.
You don't do any of
no.
those? Okay. You pretty much stick with the piano then?
Yes, I've actually been homeschooled, so I have the chance to practice all day long if I want to. With my schoolwork in between, of course.
But however, let's see, you have at least two other pianists in your family, so how do you decide who gets the piano when?
It can be quite hairy sometimes. Sometimes I get kicked off because my mother says, Robert's not getting enough time. My brother is named Robert. Sometimes she kicks me off because my sister needs to practice time. And it just, you know, we have to balance it. And we only have one piano. So it's definitely a balancing act. And then, of course, there's a time where none of us want to hear any piano. No one gets any practice time.
You get to that point.
Yeah.
And you actually do perform with Robert occasionally. Do you perform also with your sister?
I actually will be performing with my sister. She's planning on doing a concerto competition, so I will be accompanying her. So it's the first time, so she's looking forward to it.
So you at least get to share the piano for some of those occasions.
Oh, yeah. We do have two pianos in our house, but they're so close to each other, there's no way that we can each individually practice our pieces. One is an upright, the other is a grand piano.
How did you discover your teacher in Stevens Point, 2 hours from home?
It was actually how we met him was quite an interesting story. Robert, my brother, and I, were planning on competing in a, actually he was, but I was accompanying him, so it kind of was a joint effort. We were planning on competing in a concerto competition in Fox Valley. So my former teacher, Betty Close, decided that we could use some coaching lessons on it. We were playing the Gershwin's Concerto for Piano. And so actually we got him by accident because the professor she wanted us to be taught by, to be coached by, was actually not available for coaching at that time. So she said, no, try this new professor, Dr. Rafi Basalian. And as soon as we walked out of the first lesson with him, we were in shock, quietly. We were like, wow, he is so amazing as a teacher. I mean, we were like hooked on him from day one.
So what happened on day one? Did he play for you or did he have you play? Or
no,
both?
He just, as far as teaching is concerned, he worked us over and just picked at all the details that we had never seen before. And at the same time, made learning the details, learning the techniques far easier than we'd ever had. Things that we might have struggled with came so much easier under his teaching because he knew exactly how it should be played. It was, for us, quite amazing at that time.
Now, you were going down there how often to have lessons with Rafi Basalian?
I have been taking from Dr. Rafi Basalian for a year now, and so has my sister. My brother attended UWSP starting in 2010, so he's already been with him 2 years.
And so you're going down there how often are this 2 hours each way?
We go down there once a week, sometimes twice a week, sometimes three times. It depends. Three times is not as often, but it happens.
And does he has some recordings, of course. Did you study those, or is the repertory different enough from what you're playing that you wouldn't be really scrutinizing his recorded performances?
Yeah, I've seen him perform live quite often, and it's been very inspiring experience, and has made me a better pianist, actually. As far as, you know, recorded CDs and the like, he actually had recently a new CD come out, and so I haven't gotten the chance to fully listen to and examine it. So, but because I was, you know, practicing for this performance, but no, I'm planning on really listening to it and scrutinizing everything he does, because he's a really talented performer.
Well, I'll give you a chance now. How's that? Because we actually have three short selections from that CD lined up to hear. We'll hear first a piece that's familiar to those who have listened to early recordings. They would inevitably be early recordings made by Sergei Rachmaninoff. There is actually a recording of him way back playing this Polka de VR, which I think is the R stands for Rachmaninoff. I think the V is the name of his father, if I remember right.
Really?
But here it is, Rafi Basalian with Polka de VR by Rachmaninoff. UW Stevens Point faculty member Rafi Basalian with Rachmaninoff's Polka de VR. Had you heard that before?
That polka? I'd heard that before, yes. It's quite a fun little piece.
You cross your hands when you say that.
Yeah.
And what do you think that he's bringing to that polka? If you were to play it, what things would you pick up on from this recording?
Oh, definitely the waltz-like characteristics of it, the playfulness in the recording. That's something I really enjoy.
Now, I'm gathering, I don't think it's too much of a leap, too much of a guess to say that, I come to think of it, I've seen the biographical notes that Mr. Basalian is of Armenian origin.
Yes, he grew up in Armenia, and he studied at, I think, if I recall correctly, it was the Yerevan Komitas Conservatory. And I believe he got his doctorate there. And then he came to the States after that.
And some great classical music has come out of Armenia in the last 100 years. Of course, the most famous composer being Aram Khachaturian, but also some performers too, and some lesser known composers who have some really great stuff, as it turns out.
Yes.
That Mr. Basalian has recorded. And one of them goes into the record books as providing a very attractive prelude in D minor. His name was Edward Bagdasarian. Had you run into him before you studied with Rafi?
No, actually, I'd never heard of the composer before. Though, at least before I studied with Dr. Basalian, I did hear him play one or two of the preludes in a concert once, so that was the first time I ever heard any works by that composer.
Well, let's hear this one, and as I say, it's a prelude in D minor, but it's a style that has all its own. A fascinating style there in that prelude in D minor by Edward Bogdasari, and that sounds, well, at times, it's fun to play this game. I'm not sure how productive it is, but at times it sounds a little like Chopin, and certainly times it sounds like Debussy, but then it sounds also like the big flamboyant romantic composers of the later 19th century, too.
Yes, it kind of begins ethereal and then ends more Russian, almost.
We'll be back with pianist Michael Doerr and some of his music and, of course, the 12:30 quiz question in a few minutes and all of that when we return in a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Is that prelude in D minor that we just heard
the sort of thing that you consider adding to your repertory?
I think it would be definitely be something that'd be worth adding. It's so beautiful and yet so bold, especially towards the end.
What do you see as the challenges in that piece?
Definitely getting the appropriate balance between the broad and the ethereal, especially in some of those running passages, to have the right touch can be difficult sometimes.
Now, how do you prepare for a competition other than, well, presumably know the piece inside out?
There are many many different ways to prepare. It's always about striking the right balance. Obviously, trying to start on the pieces you plan to play for a competition as soon as possible and have the longest period between you and the competition is always beneficial, because more practice time always means a higher polished piece. Usually there's a lot of, for me at least, the practice preparation of getting the piece together physically, the technique, getting comfortable with the piece. Some techniques are more awkward than others. Some techniques come easily. But in other cases, it's also getting to know the piece musically inside out, how to exploit the phrasing, the rubatos and the proper timings and dynamics of the piece.
Are there styles that attract you more than others? Romantic, classical, modern, ultra-modern?
I kind of like all styles. I would have to say romantic, especially the late romantic Russian composers, are some of my favorites. Also, 20th century music I do appreciate a lot. I really like to play 20th century, especially the more dissonant pieces. Actually, one of the pieces I will be performing today will be from a 20th century composer, Samuel Barber.
Let's hear one more then from your teacher, Rafi Basalian, and this is another, actually this is a composer who is known as the father of Armenian classical music, and he had quite an interesting history. Spent most of his time in Turkey and got caught up in political turmoil there and no fault of his own. But you would not know any of this by hearing this piece, which is the title translates as Spring. The composer's name is Komitas Vardapet. Father of Armenian classical music, composer Komitas Vardapet. That was Spring in a performance from Rafi Basalian, and a student of Mr. Basalian as my guest during the midday today, live here in our Buck studio, and we'll be hearing from him, Michael Doerr, at the piano. He's been right there at our Mason and Hamlin the whole time, and we'll be hearing from him in the context of some Beethoven in a minute. And I suppose any pianist who gets up to the competition level has to have some Beethoven under his belt, right?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, this sonata, this movement from the Beethoven's Appassionata Sonata, which I will be playing. I've actually learned the entire thing, so I'm very familiar with the way he composes, and I've actually played many movements of his sonatas.
When you say the way he composes, it seems to me that in his later sonatas, he is almost in a... Well, I guess he is literally in a different century from the earlier ones. There's an almost strange modernism to some of the later sonatas of Beethoven.
Yes, he definitely developed over the years. He became almost romantic as he got more and more, and he almost pretty much set the stage for Chopin and all of the other romantic composers.
And let's see, which movement of this is the third movement of the Appassionata that we'll be hearing?
Yes.
Which is one of the later sonatas. Is that number 23?
Yes.
Okay. So that's 23 out of 32, one of the later Beethoven piano sonatas. And what are the responsibilities of you as the pianist when you play this?
Well, for one thing, it's one of the more powerful, one of the most powerful Beethoven sonatas. So, and especially this movement, it comes off of a soft, more melodic second movement, and then it transitions into this really powerful opening chordal section, and then it gets soft, and then it gets loud again, and it really develops from there, and it's really tumultuous, because during the time that the Appassionata Sonata was written, Beethoven was coming to grips with his impaired hearing and the resulting deafness that he would face later on.
And so, are we ready?
Yep.
Third movement of the Appassionata by Beethoven, Michael Dorr. Thank you.
Michael Doerr with the third movement of the Appassionata, the piano sonata number 23 by Beethoven. Splendid.
Thank you.
Back with Michael Doerr and Music of Chopin. Well, we mentioned Beethoven as having in his later years some romantic tendencies in his music, and here's somebody who I think never had any other inclination, Frédéric Chopin.
Definitely. Everything he wrote, everyone thinks is so romantic. It's probably the most romantic composer ever. One thing I like to always say, one thing we pianists have, we have Chopin that no one else has, because Chopin mainly wrote only for the piano.
Almost only just a,
that's a benefit
few chamber music things and a couple of concertos, and that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that's the benefit of being a pianist.
It doesn't get a lot better than that. And you have picked out one of the longer, larger pieces of Chopin here, a ballade, which implies a kind of a storyline.
Yeah, it's this. This is actually Chopin's first ballade. It's more of the more well known than his other ballades. It's actually been featured in films. Actually, when he first wrote it, Robert Schumann commented on it. He really liked it. He thought it was very close to Chopin's genius. It's more programmatic than other pieces he wrote, but it is definitely a story. Some people speculate that it was based on a poem by one poet, but you know, he never said, so it's hard
to tell.
To
you. Up
yeah.
to you.
Bravo. The work of Frédéric Chopin, his Ballade No. 1, in a performance by Michael Doerr, live here in our Buck studio. And we have time not to rush you right back into it, but we do have time for, you mentioned Samuel Barber and American music of the 20th century, so let's see if we can have him represented too.
Okay.
Yes, and this would be a piece you don't hear too often, I guess, the Fuga from the, it's the fourth movement from the sonata by Barber. Thank you. Spectacular.
Thank you.
That's Fuga from a piano sonata by Samuel Barber, and that word fuga comes from a Latin word meaning to fly. I'd say you were flying through that whole thing. And took a little while to work that one up, I assume.
Yeah, it's quite a difficult piece. It was actually written for Vladimir Horowitz.
Oh, well, that says a lot right there.
Yeah. The whole sonata was commissioned by the League of Composers for their 25th anniversary in 1950. And Barber made a point to say, I will compose it if you will have Horowitz debut it. And actually, what's interesting is the Fuga, which is actually the best known of this sonata, was actually not part of Barber's plan. If it wasn't for Horowitz, it actually wouldn't have been composed.
Really?
Yes. Barber actually wrote a 3-movement sonata. And Horowitz looked at it and said, oh, yeah, it's good, but it would be really even better if it had a fast movement in it, with good composition as well. But he actually took him a while to get that the fugue composed. And it took him a while to get composed. He was procrastinating too much. So Horowitz's wife, Wanda Horowitz, called Barber up and called him a constipated composer, which made him so mad that he wrote the fugue by the very next day.
There are other stories like that about Samuel Barber, too. The violin concerto comes to mind. Michael Doerr, thanks for sharing your talent with us today in the midday.
Thanks for having me.
Coming all the way down from Eagle River, Wisconsin. And thanks to our various crew members here making the midday a success, Joe Hartke and Stephanie Elkins, and also our tuner, Lyle Hirons.